Welcome to Grok the Talk, and tonight we are going into our sixth installment of Planetary Tantra. And tonight's topic centers mostly upon the importance and the actual creation of a lunar calendar and how it plays into the actual practice of Planetary Tantra. When we get into the section about the influence of the moon on organic life here on Earth, there is one thing I would like to mention that I forgot to say during the actual talk, and that is in both China and then, of course, here in Japan as well, with the use of the Chinese characters, or kanji, as they are known in Japan, that all the inner organs of the body, like the heart, which is shinzo, or the liver, which is kanzo, the zo part of these Chinese characters all include the character for the moon. So I believe that indicates that at least a long time ago there was an understanding of the deep connection between the movements and functions of the inner organs with the moon itself. So just keep that in mind. And we hope to put this into a more edited version and make it into a YouTube, so you will be able to use it as a visual aid when you go about setting up your own lunar calendar. Okay, and with that, get centered and relax, because here we go. Welcome to Planetary Tantra Talk number 6. The date is May the 19th in the evening, or actually at night here in Japan, and in the afternoon where John is in Spain. And we have a lot of things to talk about today. And to start things out with, I would like to make a couple of short announcements. One is on metahistory.org, John has put up a link to a reading and explanation he has done of the Gayan Tantra vow, and that is linked to a new gallery that we have just started to set up, which we will be uploading all kinds of audio and visual materials here in the coming months. The other one is I've been doing a few audio recordings of some of John's writings on Planetary Tantra that I originally did just for my own study, because I like to have things in an audio format. And if there's an interest from people, I will be putting up more of those if I get some feedback on that. Let's see, we also will be making a video of how to do cording, which is a topic we will talk about later, but that will be coming up here in a couple weeks. John, when we start out tonight, is there anything you would like to announce or any news on your end?
No, that just about covers what we're doing lately. Thank you.
Now, you've mentioned before that you see Planetary Tantra going into more of a audio format and using more of the spoken voice in communicating material on Planetary Tantra. How do you think you see that going now?
Well, yes, I do consider that a more appropriate way to get it out in the coming months. The foundations have been written, the foundations have been established in written form, and that's there for anyone to read. But I have a feeling that given the way things are going in the world, given the speed of events and the rather precarious course of life these days, that it might be more effective and more appealing to continue to present Planetary Tantra in a spoken form. Having said that, though, I'd also like to get a little written manual out sometime in the next few months, so that that is available as an option to sitting in front of the computer and reading.
Yes, that's a very exciting development. So how would you envision that? Maybe a 50 or 60 page small hardbound type of a manual?
No, just a little 60-page paperback, a manual of planetary tantra.
Okay. Well, wonderful. Do you, what would you say, maybe in a few months that could be realized, or?
Yeah, I'd like to get it out this summer.
Fantastic. That is a very, very welcome development. I would love to have one of those to take out with me in the mountains.
Sure.
Well, very good. Well, if there's no other announcements to cover, then let's go ahead. And tonight, I would like to walk people through setting up a lunar calendar. Because we, as we've talked about before, there's kind of three aspects here to planetary tantra in the actual practice. One is the working with the telluric energies. One is with the bima, the bioelectromagnetic aura. And the other is the observation of the night skies and naked eye observation. And so part of that is entails creating a lunar calendar. So let's go ahead and kind of walk people through how to set one up and what the implications of working with one would be.
Sure. Be happy to do that. The practice of planetary tantra is conducted on lunar time. And so you don't really need to follow the ordinary calendar, which is provided by the culture in which we live, which is primarily the Christian calendar that was developed some hundreds, some centuries ago. You switch over from that time frame to the lunar time frame in order to follow the rhythm of these Dakini energies, as I call them. And it's really easy to do this, and it's also a great advantage because it enhances interactivity with the universe and with the world around you. Suppose that you have an ordinary calendar posted in your kitchen, and you come down in the morning and you drink some juice or make a cup of coffee, and you stand there looking at the calendar as I'm looking at this calendar of May 2011. And it says, oh, today is 19th of May 2011, and the 21st is Saturday, and oh, I have something scheduled for Saturday. And so there's a tendency, we're very programmed by this calendar, and there's a tendency to say, oh, I have a meeting at 4 o'clock on Saturday. It's written on the calendar, so I should go and show up at that meeting. But this is not really an interactive calendar. The ordinary or conventional calendar is just like a notation device in which you write down, you make entries at different moments, and then when those moments come, you go to the activity or event that you have registered in the calendar. That's not really interactive. You're not really being interactive with time. You're just using the calendar as a kind of programming device. Can you see that distinction?
Yes, I can see it exactly as a control device that doesn't connect into the real natural world at any level at all.
No, in fact, when these calendars were introduced, I think it's an important historical observation. When these so-called civic calendars were introduced during the Roman Empire and in the early centuries of the Holy Roman Empire, that is to say, after the Roman Empire was married to Christian religion as the state religion, mm-hmm. These calendars were introduced to program the behavior of people who were living in the large urban populations. The pagans who were living in the countryside of the classical world at that time would have still followed the lunar calendar, and they would have been living interactively with the rhythms of the moon. So what we do in planetary tantra is return to that interactivity. And the first this exercise is relatively simple. It involves an active observation combined with the construction of a second calendar. The active observation is just simply observing the new moon or the crescent moon that appears after sunset each month. And actually, most of us already observe that, or at least we notice it. Even if you're living in the city, you can certainly are struck by the sight of the first crescent moon that it appears after sunrise. The vivid little crescent, sometimes it can be very thin. And we always know it's there, it shows up, but we may perhaps not pay very much attention to it. In this practice, we wait very carefully for the first appearance of the moon. We know when it's going to appear. We anticipate it, and we look forward to the first moment when we sight it, because that becomes the first moment of interactivity. Then you're actually interacting with a time frame that is cosmic in nature. You're not merely looking at a calendar on the wall that someone has constructed. You're in real time with the rhythms of the earth and the moon, and that is how this practice begins.
Yes, and that intent is a huge, huge part of it. It's a major step to go from the archontic setup of these artificial calendars that are, in a sense, you know, kind of the very definition of what archontic influence is, which is the virtual reality, of stepping out of that world and into a world where you are intentionally waiting and in a sense being anxious about the new shift that comes in with the sunset crescent.
That is right. You can say that the conventional calendar is an archontic device. The conventional calendar, such as I have in front of me here, May 2011, first day of the month is Sunday, May 1st, is actually a virtual reality device. It's a simulation of time, but it's not a device that allows you to enter into living time. Living time or real time is different than calendar time. So with this practice, we return to living time. Having said that, though, we do construct a second calendar. It's simply a way to keep track. You wouldn't need it if you were really, really good at observing the moon. You wouldn't even need to write down the days. You would be able to follow them by following the phases of the moon.
Sure.
Exclusively. And of course, that's how this was done by our ancestors for thousands of years before calendars were invented. Farming, the planting of crops, was based on the observation of the phases of the moon and the passage of the moon through the stars in the course of a year. So in a way, we're returning to that archaic form of timekeeping, if you wish, but with a rather new and sophisticated twist to it.
Exactly. And anybody who doubts that there are incredible powers that are connected in with these cycles, you only have to look at, you know, the high tide, low tide, and the movements or the effect that the moon has on the surface tension of the earth and of course of the oceans.
Well, yeah, not only is the earth made of what? More than 75% water, mm-hmm. which responds to the moon. Well, likewise, the human body is made of more than 75% water. Your brain, which is correlated to the moon, by the way, in astrological correspondences, if that means anything. You know, the sun is the heart. Mars is the gallbladder, I think. Mm-hmm. Jupiter is the spleen, Saturn is the liver. There are these ancient correspondences between the bodily organs and the planets. But the one most amazing correspondence that's often forgotten is between the moon and the brain. And the human brain is like a wet Kleenex. When you take the brain out of the skull, it dries up and it looks something like a chunk of cauliflower. But when the brain is actually inside your skull now, it's floating in fluid, and it's like a wet Kleenex. It has the consistency of a sopping wet Kleenex. And that Kleenex is charged, of course, with electrical and bioelectrical charges, which are firing across the synapses at billions per second. Now, that brain instrument is tremendously sensitive to the cycles of the moon. A thousand times more sensitive to the cycles of the moon than the waters of the ocean are. So what we do when we attune ourselves to this lunar cycle in the Dakini practice is to pay attention to the subliminal, what I would call the subliminal frequencies of your own brain. How do you read the subliminal frequencies of your own brain? The deeper mind waves, the deeper levels of wisdom, or the deeper levels of active divine intelligence that are operating through your own brain-mind system. How would you read them? How would you attune yourself to them? This is what we can do with the practice of the observation of the lunar calendar. And as you know, Thomas, we've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. The setup is very simple.
Yes.
I suggest that people print out a page from the computer, like I have here, print out a page from Entourage, which is the Microsoft program for Mac, and it has the calendar for May 2011. Then I use an astronomical reference, which you can find in many places on the internet, that tells me the day of the new moon each month. And the day of the new moon in May of 2011 was actually Tuesday, the 3rd of May. So on the calendar page, on the ordinary calendar page, mark Tuesday, the 3rd of May, is the end of the last Dakini cycle. The new moon is always the end of the cycle.
Okay.
So the day after the new moon is the beginning of the new cycle, and that would be, in this case, May 4th.
Okay, so to clarify that again, the new moon ends the previous cycle, and it's the next day that begins the new cycle.
Right.
Okay.
The next day begins the new cycle. So then what you would do is to put, what I do is down in the corner of the little rectangle, for each day has a rectangle. You can write things in there like appointments and things that you have. Down in the corner, I write 1. And then for May 5th, write 2. For May 6th, write 3. And what you're doing is you're overwriting the conventional archontic calendar with the real-time lunar frequencies. And so you just do that for 29 days until you come to the new moon of June, and that occurs on the 1st of June, 2011, and that is the last day of the current moon cycle. So it's about a 29 or 29 and a half day cycle. So then when you look at the calendar, you're not looking at the conventional system anymore, but you've actually transferred the calendar, you've converted it into a real-time index, a real-time framework for following the lunar cycle. The trick is that you don't just follow the lunar cycle as it's written on the calendar, as it's transposed or transcribed. You follow it visually by looking at the sky at the same time. That's where the interactivity comes in, through direct observation of the sky.
Yes, so the sunset crescent comes in roughly, say, around 40 hours after the new moon has developed. And you see that, of course, as the sun is going down. That's why it's called the sunset crescent. And you will catch just a sliver there hanging in the sky for just a very brief amount of time. And once you see that, that's when you have, in a sense, keyed into this new cycle, this new Dakini that is on shift for that upcoming cycle. So it's a very apprehensive, very exciting moment to key into it, and it's something you look forward to every month.
Yes, that's right. If you have some idea of the cycle of these Dakinis through the year, I've provided that in Planetary Tantra, there are correlations of each month and the constellation in which the moon would appear in that month. to one of these Dakini frequencies. Well, what does that mean? It's really the best analogy I can use is as if you had a kind of magical radio. And this radio is actually playing in your own mind all the time.
Hmm.
But you don't usually listen to it. You probably have a tendency, we all have a tendency to listen to the static that's in the foreground. I would call it static in the foreground. That is programs that are running in your mind that are thoughts you have about one thing or another, conventional thoughts, and also a whole range of programs or inner tapes, as they used to be called. Things that you've been told by your parents, by the authorities, by preachers and politicians. The sum total of inner talk that you're always listening to is broadcasting in your mind 24 hours a day. But just suppose that there is another broadcast happening in your mind at a deeper level, and that this radio, this subliminal radio, has a different kind of information in it. It's not really your mind as such, but it is mind as such.
Mm-hmm.
The Tibetans make a very clear distinction between your ordinary mind and then mind as such. And mind as such is really the touchstone of enlightenment and deeper wisdom. So suppose that there is a radio, magical radio broadcasting in the background of your mind, and if you could pick up on the programs that it's transmitting, you would tap directly into a stream of inner enlightenment.
Mm.
Well, the key to doing that is very simple. You have to know what programs are being broadcast at any particular time so that you can pick them up. And this is what is shown by the succession of these Dakinis or Mahavidyas through the course of the year. The correlations are listed on Planetary Tantra on my site. So you begin by observing that when any new lunar cycle begins, as the current one began on Wednesday, May 4th, you don't at first see the new moon because it's too close to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, Thomas, it takes about 40 hours. The moon moves about 1 degree every 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to separate from the sun by about 20 degrees at least before you can begin to see the slight crescent that looks like the paring of a fingernail. Sometimes you see it when it's very, very thin. Sometimes it takes a few more days. But generally by the second or third day in the beginning of each cycle, you see it. Everybody sees this. Everyone notices this usually if they happen to glance up at the sky. The difference in this practice is that when you notice that, you are aware that you're actually attuning your mind to a certain subliminal frequency. Exactly as if you were adjusting the dial of a radio. And then throughout the course of the month, you listen to that frequency. You listen for what particular theme or inspiration or thought would come through on that frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn to identify that by a little study about the nature of the Dakini who is broadcasting that frequency.
And there's a great deal of information, of course, on that on metahistory.org. And if people would like to read up more in detail, they could get The Buddhist Goddesses of India by Midanda Shah, which would be a great book to go into greater detail as well.
Right. The Buddhist Goddesses of India and Tantric Visions of the Divine Feminine are the two books. Hold on a second. Tantric Visions of the Divine Feminine by David Kingsley,
mm-hmm.
and Buddhist Goddesses of India by Miranda Shah, basically the two books that will characterize the nature of these Dakinis. Now, we don't remain restricted to that material. That is material from Hindu Tantra and from Asian goddess religion. It may not be of a style or genre that's to the liking of many people. But as I pointed out before, I use a rather crude analogy. If you go to a big convention where you're going to get some interesting information, when you enter the lobby of the convention hall, there might be some hostesses who greet you, and they might be dressed in a certain costume. Don't get hung up on the costume that the hostesses are wearing. They are really inviting you to a fantastic event where you can learn things that are extremely exciting and magical and significant. Mm-hmm. So these, the form in which we initially identify these Dakini energies and these Hindu goddesses called Mahavidyas is just a costume. It's just the costume that the hostesses are wearing. And don't get thrown off by that. The point is to understand the themes and the powers that are represented by each of these feminine figures, because those are the themes and powers that are broadcasting at these frequencies, and that is what you will learn to receive and transceive and incorporate into your own behavior. So it's important to read those books. They're very helpful, but you don't have to be stuck with that particular iconography if you don't like it.
Yes, and we'll get into setting up the calendar and how to work with it, these different ways you approach the calendar, which is based on the Fibonacci sequence, in just a second here. But I remember you had given me a metaphor in a previous talk where the mind stream is, you compared it to a stream, and then how the Dakini energies would appear as kind of jewels in the bottom of that stream. Would you like to kind of spell that out again? It's a very beautiful metaphor.
Yeah, one of the ways in which to prepare yourself for this experience is through this metaphor I've suggested. I call this experience, by the way, Dakini instruction. To receive Dakini instruction essentially means to awaken to the enlightened nature of your own mind. You know, what is the Buddha mind? It is your own mind. Or to put it the other way around, what is your own mind? Your own true mind is just the Buddha mind. It just so happens, however, that the mind can collect other things. It can collect tapes and impressions and recordings and messages that don't reflect its truly enlightened nature. So I've compared receiving Dakini instruction to sitting by the side of a bubbling brook and looking at the water. Say it's not very deep, 2 or 3 feet deep, and as you observe the water flow, you see the currents of the water, you see some foam, you see some things floating in the water. And the brook flows on, but you can look down into the brook, down into the bed that it's flowing in. And in the bed are some rocks and some stones. And as you look down, you're looking through the currents of the water, and you may see extraordinary glints of light come from the little riverbed, as if there were jewels scattered at the bottom of this brook, as if there were rubies and diamonds down there. That is exactly how it occurs when you observe Dakini instruction. It's a really good metaphor for that experience, because you observe your own mind, you see the usual inner talk, the usual blah, blah, blah that's continually going on, mm-hmm. The internal monologue, as Castaneda called it. And then, if you are prepared to detect it, you perceive these moments when something else shines or flashes in your mind. If you are prepared to detect it, that's the secret. And the purpose of this practice with the lunar calendar is to prepare you to detect it. The final point I would make before we get into the Fibonacci series is that The practice only requires that you learn a few of the themes that you would expect to be revealed each month according to the character of the Dakini who is instructing. Mm-hmm. For instance, this month, the Dakini called Bhuvaneshwari, the Mahavidya called Bhuvaneshwari, is on shift beginning on May 4th. And she is also called Vasudhara. If you read about her in Miranda Shaw's book, she's called Vasudhara.
Right.
They have various names. Each Dakini has her own signature. That is to say, there is a theme or mood that she transmits. And by knowing what this is beforehand, you prepare yourself to receive it in the course of the month. You prepare yourself to detect the Dakini wisdom flashing up out of your own mind.
And this month we actually
have... The theme and mood of Vasudhara, mm-hmm. or Bhudevi, Bhuvaneshwari, mm-hmm. is a theme of richness or abundance. It's a message about life being full and rich. It's a message about feeling rich, even if you have nothing. It's a message about enjoying the richness and beauty of the natural world, of luxuriating, as it were, in all the gifts of Gaia, and realizing that we do live in a terrestrial paradise. Part of the message or teaching of this Dakini has to do with living in true abundance, having the confidence that everything one needs in life will be provided, no matter what the circumstances are, and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. So if you develop just a small profile for each of these Dakinis each month, then you are prepped, as it were, prepped and aligned to recognize when some thought or intuition proceeding from her will flash up in your mind.
Yeah, you're developing those perceptions and those abilities to read those and to be able to key into them. And you've suggested people prepare their own kind of a notebook there and keep notes on how they feel or how they perceive each of these different shifts. And that's another good idea.
You can do that, but I must advise that it's not a journaling process as such.
Right.
And also, you're not processing psychic material and emotional material,
mm-hmm.
because the nature of the Dakini wisdom is extremely cogent and concise. And when these snippets or flashes of Dakini wisdom appear in your own mind, I can assure you that you will be able to distinguish them mm-hmm. by two features. The first feature is they're startling. They catch your attention because they're startling thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you may think that they're your own thoughts. Well, go right ahead. You can think that any thought in your mind is your own thought. But that is not necessarily true. They are not your own thoughts. And the way that you distinguish them is by the way that they flash up instantaneously in a startling manner. And they actually kind of arrest your normal course of thinking. They stop you in mid-track, in mid-thought. And this is a discernible effect. And you will notice this effect immediately. You don't have to work at it. You don't have to contemplate it. You don't have to proceed through a journaling process to eke out this material. The material just jumps out at you.
Yes, so the first characteristic is it's very startling. It jumps
right.
out at you with a different flavor than your normal
right.
mind stream.
That's right. And the second characteristic is that it's not prone to elaboration. You don't have to elaborate it. It just comes as a completely defined realization, and then it kind of resonates in your mind. I would give an example, for instance, if you had the sound of someone striking a bell, as they do in Zen monasteries, mm-hmm. you know, they have these big bells and they have these long logs suspended, and they hit the bell and it resonates. The Dakini instruction is like a message that comes to your mind, one sentence that comes to your mind just before the bell is struck. So you hear this sentence very, very clearly. You have some mental insight. You feel some mood. You feel something very, very strongly. It's vivid. And then the bell is struck and it just resonates and rings and rings and rings. And it doesn't really elaborate into a long discourse. It just resonates in your mind. And that resonance overwhelms and overwrites all the other chatter in your mind.
Yeah.
And so it's really a beautiful process of, in a way, it's quite passive in that you're just making yourself receptive to this flashing up of the Dakini wisdom. But when it happens, it becomes intensely interactive.
Yeah, well, in a sense, it's like a short burst of satori that you would get in Zen Buddhism, where just, you know, one sound of a bird crying or a bucket, the bottom of a bucket dropping out would be enough to trigger a satori moment.
Yeah, many of the stories that we hear about satori or instantaneous enlightenment are really tales of that can be compared to Dakini instruction.
Sure.
And they're beautifully relevant in that respect. Now, to get back to the the practice of how to follow this and to complete this little segment we're doing on the lunar calendar, let's talk about how the lunar month develops according to the Fibonacci series.
Sure. So it starts with the sunset crescent and the moment you've seen that. And so that'll be day one
That's
or
right.
day two on your calendar.
Right. And generally, if the conditions are good, by day three, you have sighted the sunset crescent,
mm-hmm.
and you are actually now keyed in. You have logged on to the Dakini frequency. That's day three. Then,
John, just to interrupt there,
mm-hmm.
at that point, that's where you would, or not at that point, but in those first 3 days is where you would write in observe as a kind of the
That's
mood
right.
or the
The key
approach.
Term for those first 3 days is just to observe.
Mm-hmm.
Listen and observe. Listen internally, observe the sky, and listen internally to your own mind. You'll find that during those first 3 days of each lunar cycle, there's intense inner quiet. And the deeper you can go into that inner silence, the more likely you will pick up a moment of satori and a moment of inner lucidity. Then the frequency sort of expands and develops in the remaining 26 or 27 days. And the way that it develops can be tracked by numbering the lunar calendar according to the Fibonacci series, which is 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, and then to the end of the cycle, which is 29. The Fibonacci series is just the unique series of numbers that you get by adding two numbers to get the third number. So 1 plus 2 is 3, 2 plus 3 is 5, 3 plus 5 is 8, 8 plus 5 is 13. So the first 3 days are observation. Days 5 through 8, I call attunement. At that point is when you are attuning yourself to the frequency. You maybe have had a few glimpses, a few intuitions that you might detect as coming from this deep subliminal level of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And you quiet and attune your mind. It's like tuning the dial, fine-tuning the dial of your mind to be more constantly attentive to that frequency. By day 8, we're at the first quarter of the moon, which you observe in the sky, the half. Then from day 8 to day 13 brings you up to the full moon. I call that reflect and select. Coming up to the full moon, you might find yourself in a process of reflecting on a number of things relating to the theme, the dominant theme of the month. And you kind of select the parts of that are of highest interest to you. After the full moon, which happens on the 13th or 14th day, there is another period until the 21st day, which is refining. That is when you refine the detection of these frequencies even more. And then from the 21st day down to the 28th day, or the close of the cycle, is called completion. And that is when you integrate or summarize what you have received during the course of the month. Now, this framework is not absolutely rigid, and it shouldn't be turned into a kind of straitjacket. You don't have to follow it in any rigid way. But I've observed over many years of using this lunar cycle that it does kind of, it is helpful in defining the profile or the contours of the subliminal frequencies as they unfold. So it's just a loose framework, a provisional framework that can be helpful.
And you get into the idea of the hinge also there on the second quarter moon. And
right, there's a particular moment after day 21, which is in the Fibonacci series, because 21 is the sum of 8 and 13. Day 21, day 22, and day 23 is when you see the last quarter of the moon in the sky. And this is the moon that you see in the daytime. You see the last quarter, and it looks like the hinge of a door. The round part of it is on the left, and the straight part of it is on the right, unless you're in the southern hemisphere when it's the other way around. And this, I've observed that these 3 days, which I call the hinge, are really key days when some extremely practical solutions can arise, and secrets, if you want to call it that, secrets of technique, secrets of method, of practice, of Gayan Tantra can be released and revealed during these 3 days, 21, 22, and 23 of the lunar cycle. So that about covers how it works. Is that pretty clear so far?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely crystal clear. And there's a lot of other practices then that are overlaid into this as well that we don't need to get into tonight. But there's a lot of other things that come up as well that people will start implementing in once they become more familiar with this. We probably need
I would summarize that in a planetary tantra manual as to how as to what the practices are. But I would add two qualifications, if I might.
Okay.
First is that the practice of planetary tantra is very, very simple, basically and fundamentally very simple. May not appear to be so at first, but this lunar cycle phenomenon is not a complicated thing to follow. Mm-hmm. And it's a joy to follow, and it becomes easier to practice the more you practice it. One of the keys of the practices of planetary tantra is that they're enjoyable.
Yeah.
They're enjoyable to do. They're not arduous. They're not exercises like, oh, I've got to sit down and do a half an hour of yoga, and it's really a pain, and I don't want to do it, but I like the results. Mm-hmm. This is completely contrary to the spirit of planetary tantra. In this practice, the enjoyment is the immediate result. There is no submission to a practice that later brings results. The more you enjoy it, the more results you get. Immediately.
Yes.
The second qualification I would make, and this is extremely important, as I don't think I've said this before.
Okay.
It's about the character of this practice and the objective. Why would you want to learn how to take that Dakini instruction? Why would you want to follow the subliminal signals that are emanating from the depths of your own mind? The purpose of this practice in planetary tantra is very clear, and I'll say first what the purpose is not. The purpose is not for improving your personal life mm-hmm. or solving personal problems. Mm-hmm. This is not, the Dakinis are not life coaches. And they are not there to help you be a success and make it in the music business industry.
Right.
You know, they are not there to help you find you know, the ideal boyfriend. They are not there to solve your America problems. Mm-hmm. The real objective of involvement in this practice is to become involved in the divine experiment of Gaia Sophia. That is the primary objective, to learn the purposes and designs of the planetary goddess, to learn her magic, to become interactive with her. Now, from that platform of interactivity, you might well be able to redirect your life. You might well be able to be more successful, but it is not primarily a mundane practice. It is not mundane. The objective of it is not for the improvement of your mundane life.
Sure.
It's a magical practice. And that's an important distinction to make at the outset.
Sure. Anything that comes out of having a better understanding of yourself and the world at large and increased clarity of thinking and of vision, those would be a secondary byproduct, but they're not the core reason for you to be pursuing this this practice.
That's right. It would be a byproduct. It would be a spinoff. And it doesn't necessarily happen. You know,
sure.
There's a problem on this planet, a very, very big problem, which in fact is being addressed by the Dakini instruction of this month. Part of the Dakini instruction of this month is directed by the wrathful green Tara, mm-hmm. who is called the Selector. And this term, Selector, is closely related to the Gnostic concept of Gaia's correction. One of the most important things to understand about Gaia is that she is a living and intelligent organism, a superorganism, a divine organism. And she maintains the symbiosis of all the living creatures on the planet Earth. She maintains the atmosphere. She maintains the human species and all other species. But there are things that she doesn't maintain. In fact, there are things that she doesn't even conceive of. I say, in Shamanic language, it's not in her syntax. There are things that are not in her syntax, things that happen on this planet that are not in Gaia's syntax. And one of them is social, large-scale social organization. That's not in her syntax.
Right.
She doesn't even see it.
Doesn't even see it, yeah.
That's right. That's our responsibility. And so the selection process that's happening now, particularly this month, is a selection that each one of us makes, automatically or not. You can make it automatically or you can make it intentionally. I would suggest that you consider making it intentionally. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're going to do that, you have to know what the selection is first.
Right.
So let me see if I can define it as simply as possible.
Please.
You can select yourself to be in the human social order as a participant who succeeds and thrives in that order. Or you can deselect from that order into her divine experiment. That's the choice.
Mm-hmm.
Her divine experiment, Gaia's divine experiment, does not intrinsically include large-scale social order, economy, politics, all of these things that human beings are deeply mired in.
Mm-hmm.
These are dead-end systems, and she's not interested in them. She's only interested in those systems of culture that we might create that would facilitate the highest expansion of human potential and genius,
mm-hmm.
the highest ability to play, to experiment, and to discover. That interests her. That's in her syntax. But social and cultural norms and programs that serve themselves and feed into themselves are of no interest to her. She doesn't even see them.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that makes sense. The artificial social orders would all be based on egoistic, self-centered aims of a few people that would then control the social order to their ends.
Right. Social orders are based on ego, but social order is also based on a conception of life on Earth which excludes the divine experiment.
Mm-hmm.
But we are either in her experiment or we're not.
Right.
This is the deselection process. So by being in her experiment, you deselect yourself from society.
Mm-hmm.
By being in society and making success and status in society your main objective, you deselect yourself from her experiment. You can't have one or the other.
Sure.
And those people who are selecting to be in her experiment are dropping out of society as such and creating parallel societies.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advisory caution that the parallel societies that we would then create would conform to her criteria and not to the criteria of human power, status, ambition, privilege, and egotism.
Mm-hmm.
So we will always create social orders. That is the nature of the human being. But the danger of our species is that we create social orders that feed upon themselves and that close in upon themselves and separate us from the higher, from the more exciting framework of the divine experiment as she sees it,
mm-hmm.
as she sees our potential, not as we see our potential, but as she sees it. So I really need to add that advisory point that everything in planetary tantra that we do in interactive magic has the objective of taking us deeper into the divine experiment and does not have the objective of allowing us to succeed and prevail in society as such.
Hmm.
I hope that distinction is crystal clear.
Absolutely. Wonderful. I really like that. And it's interesting, too, how the selection-deselection process is not like Tada reaching out with her finger and pointing to this person and not pointing to that person. The selection and deselection goes on by the participant themselves, or in this case, you could consider it the non-participant as well.
It does indeed. It's very fair, you know. It cannot be compared to like divine election or these ideas that come from these sick, toxic belief systems.
Right.
Like Judaism and Christianity and Islam, they all contain ideas of selection. You know, we are the chosen people, or we are the Christians who follow the Bible, and therefore we shall prevail. And at the end of time, God will save us and prove that we are right. It has nothing to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolutely based on your own intelligence. But I must say that if you don't have the option of knowing what Gaia's dreaming is, if you don't know the Sophianic myth, and if you don't have a concept of the divine experiment in her terms, I'm sorry, but you can't really make the selection because you don't know what the option.
Sure. Sure. Sounds a little cold and harsh, but that is the reality of it.
Yeah, well, the option was always available. It's not my fault that the option was destroyed for 2,000 years.
Right.
It's the fault of the fanatics of Christianity and Islam and the salvationist religions,
yeah.
who destroyed this option so that humanity didn't have the option to participate in Gaia's dreaming anymore because they didn't know what her dreaming was because the story was destroyed. But now that the story has been recovered, everyone can have that option.
Fantastic. And one part of that is doing what we're outlining here tonight, which is setting up a lunar calendar. So we have that pretty much set up, and we've gone through the way we would segment that into the Fibonacci sequence and what outlooks and approaches you would put in with each one of those segments. Maybe one other thing we could put into this would be a few words on what the surges are, because that's a concept that I hadn't come across until I came across planetary tantra, and it's a very interesting one that is very palpable.
Right. Well, this is a really this is a key aspect of the process, and how should I introduce this? Let's just say that based on the Fibonacci cycle, we have a kind of format for attunement and alignment to subliminal mind wisdom, and we can practice it each month. Each month it has a different character. We detect the character from the profile of these dakinis, these tutelary deities, as they're called. They are aspects of Gaia's mind, of her own mind. They are actually frequencies of the mind of Gaia. And what I discovered in 2008, in a series of rather remarkable experiences at that time, was that Gaia is currently in a phase, the planet itself is currently in a phase of awakening. And in this process of awakening, which could be characterized in many ways, there is one central event. The central event is communication with the human species. So a lot of people, you know, are talking about planetary shift and the planet is awakening and we're going to have Earth changes and the great age of enlightenment may be around the corner. I mean, I'm sure everyone listening to this talk is familiar with those notions, wouldn't you say?
Yes, certainly.
Right. So what would I have to add to that general notion to give it a slightly different spin? I would say that we can speculate like crazy about this awakening, and some of the claims that people are making may be true. But there is one essential way to test if it is really true. In order for something to be true, it needs to be testable. I use the term veracious, V-E-R-A-C-I-O-U-S. And I use the term veracious to refer to something that is truthful and known to be truthful, because its truth can be tested. Now, many claims that are being made about the current planetary shift, 2012 and so forth, are, to my mind, not veracious. They may be correct. They may be on the right track. They may be hopeful intuitions. They may be optimistic projections that come true in the near future. I wouldn't deny any of that. But they are not veracious. They cannot be tested. They remain in the area of optimistic speculations. The difference with the message of planetary tantra is that it is veracious and it can be tested. So if I say to you, if I make the claim that in 2008, I discovered how Gaia wants to communicate with the human race and wants to communicate with each and every one of us individually, I will only say that if it is veracious. I will only make that claim to you if I can then turn around and show you how to verify that claim. And this is what the Shakti cluster is about and about the surges. So very briefly, is that, are we on track here so far, Tom?
Absolutely, please. I'm chomping at the bit to hear this.
Very briefly, I'll put it in this way. What I realized in 2008 when I received the term of Gaia Awakening is that there is forming on the planet, in the atmosphere of the planet itself, in the very atmosphere, not in the Earth that we walk on, but in the electromagnetic field, the bioelectromagnetic aura or bima, an organ is forming. If the planetary animal mother, Gaia Sophia, is going to speak to us, she needs an organ to speak through. People would say, well, how can the planet, even if it is an animal, even if it is a superorganism, alive in its own right, how can it communicate with us? It doesn't have a tongue and lips. What I'm saying is that Gaia Sophia has formed for her own purposes of communicating with us a kind of larynx structure, something that is similar to the larynx in the human body. Now, I'm speaking to you now using my lips and my tongue. Breath is coming out of my mouth from my lungs. But the reason why you can hear me is because it's coming through the voice box or larynx. Gaia Sophia herself has formed a larynx. I call it the Shakti cluster. I also call it a console, because one way to compare it, one of the best metaphors for it is to consider it as a console with 18 channels. And she is broadcasting since 2008. She is broadcasting her mind, her messages, her wishes and intuitions into the human mind on these 18 frequencies. And so what happens during the monitoring of the lunar frequencies is that two times each month, there is a surge of the Shakti cluster, which means that there is a particularly powerful moment of broadcasting two times each month. And those moments are not designated by the Fibonacci series. They are designated by another factor, which we ought to talk about on another talk.
Sure.
But the point is, not to make this too complicated, that you can count on there being two moments each month when the entire dynamic, the entire energy of the Dakini frequencies will reach a very, very high level of transmission.
Mm-hmm.
I call that the surge.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, remarkable things can happen. And as I think we should dedicate another talk to this, but
sure.
you've experienced quite a few surges. You might want to comment on them here yourself in a moment.
Sure.
But I would just say that the unique characteristic of the surge, which happens twice a month, with this month it was on the 15th of May, and the next one is on the 27th of May. What happens during the surge is that you don't just hear or catch a flash of the Dakini wisdom in your own mind, but you feel it surge through your entire body.
Mm-hmm.
The broadcast is surging through your entire body. And so it becomes more like listening to music, listening to a fantastic symphony that suddenly swells up, and suddenly you feel yourself swept into the music and the power of this symphony at that moment. And it can be an extremely exhilarating experience. I think you would attest to that.
Absolutely. It's exhilarating, it's exciting, and it's also at times you're also a little bit apprehensive knowing when one is coming up. It's like, can you grit your teeth and get through it sometimes? Because it really kind of overwhelms your circuits in a sense. It's an exciting thing, but it's also a very perilous type of a feeling at times as well.
It does. It's like a surge or voltage of electricity.
Yeah.
It does overwhelm your circuits at times, but that is the nature of contact with Gaia.
Sure.
It's impossible to be in close contact with her without feeling that you are energetically overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an overwhelming that destroys you or harms you. It's actually an overwhelming that sort of undoes you
mm-hmm.
by taking you beyond your limits.
Mm-hmm.
I've been criticized in my practices with people as a Nawal that I don't respect people's limits. Sometimes when I have the occasion to take them out into a shamanic adventure,
mm-hmm.
I push them a little further than they might care to go. But that's what she always does. And I must say, I'm just following her example.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't want it any other way.
Yeah, if we stay within our own limits, it's going to take us a million years to get around to what it really means to be human. So she's always pushing us through the envelope. And at the two moments each month of these surges, you can really feel that happening if you're paying attention.
Absolutely. Well, very good. Very good. So that we've got out a bit on the table. We'll go into more of that in detail in later talks. But I think we've outlined the lunar calendar very well. And in the next few days here, we're going to pick up and talk about the events that happen on March 19th and where planetary tantra goes fractal. So look forward to that. And John?
Right. Planetary tantra mm-hmm. goes fractal would be the title of our next talk.
Fantastic.
Which would be the seventh talk.
Yes. It'll be, yes, that's right. It'll be the seventh talk. That's
excellent.
Right. Very good. Well, John, I think we've covered a lot of things today, so let's go ahead and wind things up for tonight, and we will schedule the next talk here in a couple days.
Sure enough. That would be great, Thomas. Okay. Thanks, as always.
Thank you, as always. It's always fascinating, to say the least.
Okay.
Okay, I will talk to you later.
Bye for now.